Hey everybody, it's Tim Emerson of Kuan Yin Healing, and we are here for our Q&A call. And we are, so far we've got Bruce and Eileen has also joined us. And so, hey guys.
Hi.
So this week we were talking about spirit, and I was just trying to get Eileen chatting about her expanded meditation practice. So, don't know if that will happen or not, but
yeah. meditation is definitely—it's one of my daily practices, and it's been it's been a daily practice even prior to my reconnection. But after the reconnection, it really expanded, and from that, now it's been—I was counting—it's actually been 9 months. I got reconnected on Easter, and now this is the Christmas season. Mm-hmm. Time for another rebirth. But the it's been when I happen to meditate laying down before sleep at night, and each meditation brings like an intensity of vibration at night, and over the months it's been slowly it increases, and until, you know, I've had some pretty cool experiences, like, you know, just feeling that expansiveness, like you're part of the larger, you know, the larger universe, intense peace. You know, in almost, you know, there's some, each meditation sort of has a different flavor to it. You know, some of them are more of an ecstatic kind of joy, but there's always a really, really deep sense of peace. And it's also been, they're not always like that. Not every night when I lay down, they're totally there. There's ebbs and flows. There's some nights when it is very light, and it's taken a while to understand that it doesn't go away when it's not as intense as it was the other night. It's sort of like the ebb and flow of the universe kind of thing. And it's been really exciting. It's been really, really exciting just experiencing the evolvement of it since the reconnection. They never, ever were the intensity they were before then. So.
Yeah, interesting. I like to think of it as a like tuning in, almost like a radio. So it's when I turn the radio off, the radio waves are still going.
Right.
Yeah.
It's consistent. It's always there, and it's you know, sometimes it's working with them too. Like most of it, I find is just allowing. You know, it's just allowing ourselves to tune in instead of forcing things or anything. You know.
Are you finding it start to spill over into your non-meditative times?
Absolutely. That was another, like, post-reconnection definite thing that happened, was that it wasn't isolated into this, okay, we're only feeling this during meditation, but that expansiveness of consciousness is, you know, happens at other times, too, and it spills right over into the daytime. It's funny because... Heather was laughing the other day and saying, the reconnection's ruined listening to love songs because these people just need to get reconnected and get, you know, read the four agreements. Because you start looking at it from that perspective of, you know, not the ego, but beyond.
I love it. Yeah, awareness, that's the trouble with getting aware. You start being aware.
yeah, and it's, you know, relationships too are another thing where it takes, it takes, you know, Grace, my older daughter, was the one that hadn't gotten reconnected, and it's really difficult sometimes to relate, whereas, you know, prior it wasn't. And
right.
Now, and it, not difficult, but you have these awarenesses, like, of the communication when people are talking to you, of where they're coming from with things. You're able to see it from that higher perspective, from a less ego-oriented thing. And it's really great when with Heather and Tess being able to, they also got reconnected with me, and we all kind of call each other out and bring up stuff from, you know, and bring up quotes and bring up, you know, remember Tim said, oh yeah. And it's been a really wild trip.
Yeah, I remember early on Tess being really excited when she realized
she has done some really amazing. You know, she doesn't meditate every day, but definitely some definite higher conscious expanded things going on there too. Lots of personal work.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like being around a little guru.
But when she realized she could feel the energy of her just in the car with her dad, and it's like, oh, he's going to say something, and then he did, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
She's learning to listen to those intuitive moments, and we all are. We've all become way more, you know, just listening to that flow and not getting so much in the mental, you know, questioning, oh, that's not right, but just really just listening to that initial flow and going with it, kind of thing. And it's opened up a lot of intuitive avenues there as well.
Yeah, that's an important point, actually, and one that Howard also reached, and he and I were talking one day, and actually, I like the way he phrased it, so I started stealing it. he says, you know, because he's a lot like me, he wants to analyze everything, and he's good at it. And he says, I needed to let go of my need to understand everything.
Yeah. And just let it be and
right.
Kind of surrender and allow. and
right.
And those are tough things. They're simple words. They're simple terms, but they're so major when it comes to understanding the universe and allowing things to flow through you. We so much want to control everything, think about it, analyze it. I think the discussion we had this Tuesday was a willpower one. Where does willpower, you know, if you can't willpower everything, but you have to willpower certain things. Because Tess had been reading, I don't know if you've ever read this book, it's called The Marathon Monks of Mount Hay. And it's about these monks in Japan that go, they have 100 days, and I think they, I don't know if they run 100 miles each day or something like that as part of their moving practice. And we were talking about how, well, it makes, you have to have willpower to do that, you know, but at a certain point, I think the willpower ends and it just becomes surrender and you just become the flow and the source, and that's how you get through those kinds of things, you know.
That would be quite a distance.
Yeah, it's crazy, but they're monks that, and they run them in straw sandals or something like that.
I'm reading, looking this up now, while the description of the book. The greatest athletes in the world today are not the Olympic champions or the stars of professional sports, but the marathon monks of Japan's sacred Mount High?
H-E-I. Yeah, or High.
H-I-E-I. High? Anyway, over a 7-year training period, these running Buddhas figuratively circle the globe on foot. During one incredible 100-day stretch, they cover 52.5 5 miles daily.
Oh, 50 miles. Okay. I thought it was, I thought it was 100 or something.
Right. Twice the length.
50 is crazy too, but.
Mm-hmm. Right. Twice the length of an Olympic marathon, and the prize they seek to capture is the greatest thing a human being can achieve, enlightenment in the here and now. With straw, with handmade straw running shoes, in a ceremonial leap into a waterfall. Sounds like fun. By written by John Stevens, a professor of Buddhist studies, and Tohoku Fukushi University in Sendai. Interesting. Very interesting. Another book to get. Yeah, this whole thing at first it seems that we can never turn the mind off, that it just wants to take everything, and then the mind just keeps trying to loop us into things. So we say things like, well, you know, I deal in reality and not in imaginary things. And then if you take a close look at us, you know, during a walk or something, you realize your mind mostly is imagining crap, you know, anything but paying attention to where it is in actual reality. And at the same time, you know, we create from the mind. And so So at first, learning to not totally live in the mind and define that separation, and then how to use it, learn how to use it as the tool it is without making it, you know, king of the road again. Eckhart Tolle talks about creative processes going back and forth between mind and spirit every couple minutes, going in, pulling back, going in, pulling back, going in, pulling back. It's an interesting process, to be sure. And so, while at first there's this tremendous resistance to you know, letting go of what we see as rational and our tool for sorting out reality, when we realize actually it's not doing that at all. In fact, it's mostly lying to us. And then stepping back and getting into reality that's different than what we thought. And then learning to sort out in that new reality what's real and what's not, and then to use the mind. It's something that takes practice. And speaks to a couple of things that Bruce has posted in Facebook here. And one of the points I would make before getting into some of those questions is that, like anything else, it takes practice. You know, it's you don't run 52 miles your first day. No matter how brilliantly I explain how to play the piano, you can't sit down and play the piano that day, or that week, or that month, or that year, in the case of the piano. Things take time, and it takes time to build new habits and new skills, and it takes more time to get comfortable and confident with those new habits and new skills. And all that is incredibly appropriate. Imagine if I were trying to learn how to play the guitar, and everything my guitar teacher said, I was like, yeah, but is it real? You know, it would so slow down my process, but that's what we do. And it doesn't, not that playing the guitar is so intrinsically difficult. It's that it'd be tremendously in my own way that way. So just simply learning to step back and sort through those thoughts versus, you know, what's real, and being able to start to be open to here are the things that are what's real, I think are really crucial parts of that process. And before we can, you know, delve into, you know, whatever mysteries, so to speak, we want to delve into, just starting to get comfortable with the idea that the world is different than I thought it was. And because the world is spirit, the Buddhi plane, is of a higher vibration than the mental plane. You know, we want our first impulse is we want to wrap our head around it, and to realize that that's actually physically impossible. That we use physical as in terms of manifestation, not the physical realm. That it's too fast a vibration. We literally can't wrap our head around it. It's not up to the task. It's just not something that's going to happen. But to learn that we have other ways of knowing than the mind alone, and to learn to use those. And nor is this tremendously mystic. I'm an artist, a musician, and so I totally get this, that from that one perspective is music is, for example, a completely different way to think, putting think in quotes. There's a different way to know what's going on that doesn't involve conscious thinking. Really good athletes in the zone do the same thing. You know, marathon monks seeking enlightenment. I get it. I'm really curious to take a look at this book. Set in the Art of Archery, as I read years ago, same thing. And I think pretty much anything that anybody's really, really good at is going to find that space where there's more than what's simply in their conscious mind. And that's an important first step, is to realize it's not that we'd want that we there's a problem with using our minds, but realizing that there's a greater reality that we're not going to wrap our heads around, and that that's okay, and that there are other ways to know this. Bruce asks, posting in the Facebook group, can we get a sense of comprehension and understanding without, quoting my words, wrapping our minds around it? And the answer is absolutely, without question. For example, that's what intuition in the true sense really is, that immediate knowing and comprehension and understanding, that gut feeling, that sense when things click. Let me think of some examples that are less mystical. Tennis is a good example. I'm not a really good tennis player, but when I do, but I'm okay. And when I do hit a shot, you know at the second you hit the ball that everything is perfect. You know, you don't have to wait to see how it turns out. You know in that minute, you feel it. There's that feedback. This is perfect. Something similar happens in music that I don't think I can explain in words. Just a dropping into a different way of thinking, understanding, that's way faster than the mind. Like, for example, when a musician doing that, I can, as a musician, do something I can't do in a classroom, for example. I know what everybody is playing. I know what they just played. I know what they're about to play. I know where they're going with their lines. I know what little tiny changes they're making. And I'm adjusting to all of this not with no response time. I'm doing it at the same time they're doing it, if it's a good group that we're playing together, that we've played together well. And even if it's many players on stage, this is what professional musicians do. You know, there's even words for it. We call it feel, you know. Can you play, you know? And rock musicians call it in the pocket. It's just there's this deeper sense of reality that you not only comprehend and understand, but consciously use. You know, professional athletes talk about things like zone and things like that, and I can't really speak to that personally, but yeah, Bruce, absolutely. When the reconnection and energy alignment, one of the things that's so remarkable about that is that because we're talking about faster frequencies, it's faster than the mind, so it just cuts through that mental confusion that we that we usually have. And so things happen that don't exist in my thought universe. So in my case, when I was first exposed to this, you know, I had a miraculous healing in my back, and several of my clients have had miraculous healings or sudden clarity about emotional issues or direction. And it's like all the messy thought stuff is just not even there. It's at a much higher vibration, like gamma rays at much higher frequencies just shooting through the earth. How do gamma rays do that? Well, at that fast a vibration, there is no earth, right? It just, it's too slow. Einstein talked about this, multiple worlds at different frequencies. It's like where we started. It's tuning into a different frequency, a different energy, and being open to that. So things were happening to me that I didn't understand, and that I, quote, didn't believe, in the sense that I wouldn't have believed it earlier if somebody had told me about it. And I wasn't really sure what to do. And, you know, I was seeing and experiencing things that I couldn't explain away. My clients were seeing things and experiencing things I couldn't explain away. And we were often looking at the same thing, in terms of spirit. And it was, I had to accept that there's something else going on, that I wasn't going to be able to wrap my head around. But I did find that there's other ways to feel it, that, you know, there's an energy to us. Yeah, I think everybody's had that gut feeling, you know, and there's some physical aspects to that, you know. It's a snowy day here, right? The roads are snow covered. Suddenly your car skids out and there's that wrenching in your gut. There's also energy that goes all the way through us from something I typically feel like in my vertically, like between my lips and my chest down to my gut. It comes and goes, but it more comes than it these days. And it's and it shifts, it changes. You know, it's depending on what's going on. It's, you know, very much an energy. Someone to whom we're very, very, very close, I first noticed this years ago with my friend Louise, when I would get a very sharp sensation, like right before I got an email or a call or something like this. And she noticed the same thing. And then it just began to expand, you know, beyond simply tuning into one person. So, we have many other senses, many other ways to explore things. There are senses that animals have that we don't use, not a mystical thing, but, you know, scientists have documented. And so, for example, we don't usually think about sensing heat, you know, the way that a snake might. Or there's a really fascinating documentary on a fox hunting in the snow in the Arctic, and it's and they're actually paying attention to ley lines, magnetic lines, and if the fox is looking for mice under the snow or listening for mice and turning into something else, though, because if the fox misses most of them, but if the fox is facing north, I forgot what the number was, but the success rate went up like really, really high. I'm thinking it was 75%, something like that. When it was alignment with the pounces were in alignment with the magnetic lines. It's really, really fascinating stuff. Or birds migrating, or butterflies migrating, and we do have some of these capabilities. The Australian Aborigines talk about the dream time, and can walk ley lines. So there's so much more. And the problem is only that we are clouding ourselves. Physicists talked about, I just came across this the other day, there's a theory in astrophysics that an old theory. It's not something new at all. It's that you know there are all kinds of events happening in our universe, but we have almost a protective consciousness is the word they use that keeps us from seeing it, and, you know, from rocking our boat. So this is kind of what the mind does. We just, you know, things we don't want to see, we just ignore. Mathematically, we, you know, it's, you drive that we exist in 11 dimensions. I can't even imagine that, you know, but that's the reality of things. And that's just way more than I can wrap my head around things. Quantum mechanics, you know, we know that particles just jump across time and space, and that once they're paired, they're paired. And you can separate them and change one, and there's all kinds of things that shouldn't happen that happen. And how do we wrap our minds around that? Time is nothing but a local phenomenon. You know, there's really no such thing in a universal or quantum sense, and yet we can't wrap our heads around that. Largely because in English, you can't do a sentence without using a subject and a verb, or an understood subject and a verb. And verbs tell us tense when things happened in time. Can we have language without tense? We can. The Hopi language, for example, the American Southwest has no concept of tense. They have a concept of intensity. So instead of there was a house, there is a house, there will be a house for them. Intensely house, less intensely house. You know, the Navajo idea of everything is manifest or manifesting in a big tapestry. Nor is this unique to them. Hindu philosophy is much the same thing. The Upanishads start with, filled with Brahman is everything that is, filled with Brahman is everything that is not. So first just making that jump that there's more. So anyway, when these strange things started happening to me, and I was, you know, you would think I'd like, woohoo, I'm making so much progress. I was not happy about any of this. This rocked my boat in a major way. I'm a skeptic. I like to have everything rational. It's why, you know, it's how I come up with programs like this. I'm very thorough. I want to know the answers. Actually, in the end, you know, sat down with a great guy who had, you know, but with my AA sponsor, and he knows everything else about me. Why not this, right? So we sat down, and he listened, and I talked, and we talked about this, and he said to me, you know, Tim, if you have found a way to experience the world without your head, go for it. There's nothing wrong with that. It's one of the big problems with alcoholics is they're always in their head. And, you know, one of my theses here is that we all have our addictions. And the problem with our addictions is we're up in our heads. So, absolutely. I can tell you firsthand in a couple of different ways, get a sense of comprehension and understanding without wrapping our heads around it. What's another example? I think nearly everyone has had this experience, right? You walk into a room and there are no visual clues, but immediately you have the sense something is wrong. You know, something just happened. There's an argument. It's tense. You can feel it instantly. And there's no rational path to that. So our minds are important and very, very crucial. But the whole point of understanding this at the spirit level and more is understanding that we are so much more than those minds, and that we're not going to wrap our head around it. So I've been rambling. How's this landing for folks? Any thoughts? I guess not.
Sorry, I had to unmute myself. I'm multitasking. I don't want to mess up your recording. So, a lot of what you're saying makes a lot of sense. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Okay.
There was another thought, but it's gone. It'll come back in a minute.
This kind of ties in with the second question I asked. Did you get a chance to read that second question?
Yeah, I'm looking at them, but shoot.
As I try to tune into higher source cells, et cetera, I have what feels like inspiration, but it often manifests as thoughts or thought processes. Since getting out of my mind and thoughts has been a challenge, is this a valid path of information for me? And how do I give it the space needed to form while still trying to be in tune with spirit? And I put in parentheses, I feel these things and peace with these things. Maybe it's coming from heart. My mind is just putting it into words.
Yeah, this is an awesome question. So yeah, vibration flows downhill, so to speak. So, you know, as the energy gets denser, you may have found, I know a lot of people who find this, something will happen, there'll be some change, and you feel the effects of it in 3 days. This happens to me a lot. A lot of clients call me 3 days later, all excited about something that has just happened after healing. And it's because it takes time for these things to go into denser vibration. So something starting as inspiration, Bruce, that then goes into, then takes thought form and so forth. Yeah, that's totally valid. And the only challenge is to just let it happen. You know, if we start jumping on it and overthinking it, then we're back to problem A. Yeah, sure. But that's absolutely a valid path. How do I get the space needed to still trying to be in tune with spirit is stay unattached to it and just watch it and just let it flow. And to be open, there's nothing wrong with things happening in words. Often, this is why symbols are important. I learned to respect shaman a lot more once I started to understand this, because pictures, symbols, these are often come with flashes of insight and spirit and intuition. So yeah, totally valid.
When these thoughts come to me, I do some analysis. Just intrinsically, okay, for instance, how do I apply this to my life? How do I apply this to this situation?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I get a lot of growth from that. Should I pause and let just be with it for a while, or is analysis at that level of how do I apply this thing that just occurred to me, is that okay?
Yeah, I don't think it's wrong. There's anything wrong with that. Just understand that when you do that, you're going back and forth.
Okay.
Okay. And it's no different, really, than, you know, sometimes I need the circular saw, and sometimes I need the screwdriver. I go back and forth.
But they can both be used together to complete a project.
Mm-hmm. If it's time you're setting aside, sometimes there's value in both ways. I don't want to overthink this either. You might want to just let it come, jot it down, analyze it later, or. You know, if it's a, you know, you want to jump on it, and then that's great too. I think that's fine.
I'm playing with meditation in my spiritual practice because it's something I'm not familiar with. And so part of that meditation is to focus on my breathing. What I do is I read something. I've been reading that 365 Tao, which some of it rang really true. Some of it's like, that makes no sense, but where it's really frustrating. But as I read that, and then I try to be open to, okay, what's my lesson for today? And just really be in tune with what do I want to learn today, and either get it out of the inspiration of what I've read or something else that's come across my path recently, or just completely be open to the intuition for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I use that to kind of come up with my intent for the day. And then once I've got that, then I decide, then I feel like, okay, I want to meditate and just be. So I'll try to focus on my breathing, but if some application to the intent comes in as I'm doing that, then I let it come in. But then I feel like, well, okay, I'm going back to thought, and I'm trying to just be observant of thought. So it's it's still a little bit of a struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's a rockin' policy. Yeah, just give it time. Everything gets better with practice. The whole idea of being, you know, being open, the only thing I would have added at all, I think you may already be there, is be willing to be surprised. But yeah, just being open and present and to what happens or doesn't happen or comes or doesn't come. And after a while, when you do it for a while, you can feel the space. You know, it's like you're falling into a groove, you know, a good groove. You know, like we were talking with the tennis shot or that perfect pool shot. You're just like everything is lined up and you can feel it.
I play racquetball, and it's exactly what you mean. The second the ball contacts the racket, you know whether it's going where you want it to or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That'll happen here. And with the Tao book, too, just be patient. There'll be times, some of the things that you don't understand, just let them go. Another time you look at them and they're going to make perfect sense.
I'm okay with those. The ones that are really frustrating, well, the ones that are frustrating are the ones that are frustrating, like, okay, this just pisses me off.
Well, then turn the page. Eileen?
I was just going to say that the trick is getting those mastery moments to happen all throughout life, because our daily practice is great for hooking in and it's getting it to expand to all other places is, you know, mm-hmm. what we try to do.
Yeah. That's the whole secret to walking with the divine.
Yeah.
Is to keep getting closer to that. Thanks. A related question that Bruce asked here, how do we best ask our spirit guides, for lack of another term, for help without manifesting lack in our speech, i.e. please find get with X, just saying that the way manifests current lack, and if so, how can we seek what we desire in a way that manifests abundance instead? Okay, so first of all, this is the line between prayer and meditation, okay? And the best way to do this without manifesting lack is what you already said, just being open to, you know, to whatever. What's the plan today? Or letting that come. Manifesting is a whole other thing. We're actually going to end in January with some material about manifesting, because manifesting takes more than connection. It takes clarity. It takes coherence. And meaningful change. So it's a little bit trickier. But in terms of avoiding manifesting lack, it's going with the essence of things. This is really good for attachment. So if it's not, you know, well, you know, I have to be with Betty or my life will end, it's like, no, what is it? This is where we started, the essence of why do you want these things? What does it do for you? What does that 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 do for you? Then we get to the essence of what we're looking for. And if we focus on the essence, I have found this in my own life a bunch of times. Abraham talked about this particularly well in all over the place, but in the Vortex book in particular. Tuning into the essence of what you want and experiencing the joy of that. And what I have found is that something better comes really, really fast. So, Betty still goes her way, but then along comes, I don't know, Sabrina, and Sabrina's rocking, you know, I'm better in every way. And it's like, whoa. I have had that experience pretty frequently in a number of different ways. And then we're no longer attached to the way that it has to happen.
I've been trying to consciously do that in prayer, for lack of another term, to say, okay, this is what I got out of this experience. This is what I would like to experience. I've been also trying to clean up my speech, and so I'm wondering if saying that this is something I want indicates lack, or if I can just, if that's pure intent, and say, yeah, this is something I would like to experience again. The way I experienced it here was really nice, but if there's a better way for me to experience that, or that can also benefit others, I'm totally open to that.
Yeah. So in the example you gave, one of the things is, our past experiences are still experiences. So, while this happened, it was wonderful, it's over, it's still part of my energy consciousness, and I can still go back there. So that helps get rid of the attachment lack there. But also, the going, okay, this is the form I think it might work, but I'm totally open to it being better. I know a lot of people end their prayers with, may this or something better, right? For the greatest good of all. And so it opens the door to, here's the plan as far as my limited mind can see, but I'm totally open to better plans and better solutions and surprises. And that also helps get rid of the attachment. The other thing that really helps me anyway is to understand the hero's journey is that the vibration of what we're looking for is revealed by how close it comes to awareness. And it doesn't mean that any of it's wrong, but recognizing that helps me understand and put what I want in context. So when I understand that the ultimate boon is awareness, that in the end, eventually, in whatever lifetime, to think use it in those terms, the only thing I will want is awareness. It helps me realize that these are all steps on a journey towards learning more, towards getting more clarity, towards, experiencing and co-creating with the universe. And so to just sit back and lay back and have some fun, I was thinking of this earlier while I was out skiing, that it's kind of like we're on a river. And we have some control. We can row this way or that way or the other, but we're still in a river. And, the river is still going to take us where the river is going to go. And, we can try to micromanage and control and analyze and things that we're just not going to be able to do because the river is just going to happen faster than that. Or we can make a conscious decision to go, there's a bunch of things I want, and you can do that. If you decide you want to collect rocks or watch birds, you can do that on a river once you make those decisions, once you've made those choices. But mainly to just sit back and go, I'm going to enjoy the river, and to follow those desires and wishes, but also to ride the river and to understand that I'm headed somewhere here that is headed somewhere higher towards awareness. No matter however easy or hard I make it, it's headed there eventually, because that's the way with rivers. And it just helps me take myself a little bit less seriously, which helps with the mental ego thing. The other thing that helps a lot I know this comes up, but I learned a lot recovering from alcohol. And one of the things that I experienced that was not fun at all was repeated lessons in humility. This isn't fair. People aren't treating me the way that they should. They have the totally wrong idea, and I just had to sit and swallow it. And I did not like that. But I got, as I went through these and I got on the other side of these, it was okay when I let things go. And every time I let things go, it came with a greater peace and a greater awareness. There were lessons I learned that were really useful moving forward. And eventually, it took me a while, I started to make the connection between the two and understand that, you know, when something comes up and I get some new lesson in humility, it comes with a greater awareness. And the reason it does is that I'm getting myself out of the way. And when I'm out of the way, I can see more of the truth. When I shared that with my AA sponsor, and he said, "And now that you know that, now you have to put it into practice." I said, "No, great." but along with that, totally came something I only kind of quasi understood in many disciplines. Like, so, for example, I do a lot of work with Mark Silver at Heart of Business, who talks about, you know, he's a devout Sufi, so he's talking about you know, humility to the divine, and to Kuan, and to, you know, to everything. And I suddenly got that. Now, although it's not to, you know, just for some ritual, some practice, or you know, I need to kneel, or God's going to smite me, or anything like that. It's a matter that when I humble myself, I'm open to more truth.
So you think the words we use, like saying "I want," "I would like this," or "I want this," or "I desire this," that's just minutia. I don't need to worry about how I phrase it, as long as the way I'm feeling and the way the energy that I'm carrying into it is one of "I'd like to experience this," but I'm willing to realize that there's people more wise than me that can help me decide what I really want to experience.
Yeah. Yeah, or just being open to, but, you know, there's a lot of different ways this could happen, and to let go of the way that the fact that it has to happen in this way. A lot of the people I know, for example, who are struggling with money, the reason they're struggling in money is they insist that things have to happen in this one particular way, and in doing so, they shut off tons of other things. So just to come up with a silly example. You know, to say, okay, I signed up for this course and I put all the dates in my calendar, and then Tim said, "You know what? I just won the lottery. I'm going to take all of us to India for a year, all expenses paid. We're going to study with all the best teachers in India." And instead of going, "Yeah," we said, "God damn it, I put all this stuff in my calendar already. This totally messes things up," you know. but that's exactly what we do. We get too attached to, "But I already planned this." So it's a little bit of an art to have a plan, but to be willing to ditch the plan at every turn as we come up with better plans and more information and more truth.
It's kind of like the leaping, you know, taking that leap before you, what is it saying? You take a leap, but the step forms after you've taken the leap.
yeah.
I'm not saying it right. I'm totally butchering the quote.
No, I get you. It's like Indiana Jones stepping out into the into the crevasse, and suddenly there's a bridge.
Right.
Sometimes maybe what you're looking for is sometimes your only step forward is a leap of faith. And that's just a hard jump at first to make, to go from, you know, you just have to believe, which doesn't do anything for me either. But at the same time, realizing I believe all kinds of stuff all the time. I need to pay better attention to what I choose to believe because it affects my experience. It's a fun ride.
If you're praying for something, how do you express desire? Do you use words in your head, or how do you express a desire for something?
Okay, there's a couple different things. So if I'm, well, first of all, the actual act of sitting and praying for something, I usually don't do that. In terms of a goal, I'm much more of I'm here, I'm available, attuning in. In terms of what I'm trying to achieve and desires, there's...
Okay, I'm going to stop you for just a minute. How is that different than the meditation? Because I thought that's what the meditation was.
It's not different than meditation.
Okay.
Right. Okay. I think it's more effective. But if I'm looking for, because I just do certainly have goals, right? Kuan Yin Healing has goals. It's a little bit different in that there I need much greater coherence. And I have found that the way to achieve greater coherence is very Taoist. Surprise, surprise, coming from me. Is to weed away the things that are tangents. And to get clear, So, for example, somebody wants to be a life coach, right? Somebody says, I say, what do you do? Oh, I'm a life coach. That means nothing to me. I still have no idea what they do. But somebody who is really, really cleared away, what kind of coaching, who do they work with? So, for example, there's actually a coach I know, be a good example. Works with spiritually conscious women who are having trouble losing weight. Okay, so that's suddenly I have a clear picture of who she works with, and now I've got names coming to mind, not just vague things. So getting clearer about things, having greater coherence, gives me a focus. And when you have a focus, people. What are my choices? Actually, it works the other way. You have to make a choice, and then things start happening. So let's go back to the river. I decide I'm going to collect purple rocks. I never saw purple rocks before, but now that I've decided to collect them, I see them everywhere because I'm paying attention. And I mention it to you, and now you're paying attention, and you say, hey, Tim, here's a purple rock I got for you. And suddenly purple rocks are showing up. Only because I've made choices and decisions. So that's more of a focus, I think. And then also getting clear about what's the deeper meaning. Why do I want to do this? What am I giving in service? How is this contributing? What's the greater plan? And then... constantly learning. If I do have something particular I'm looking for, I will put it out there. I like the way, I'm trying to remember who said this, the goal of the mind is to identify problems, ask for help, and then walk away. So I could put it out there and then leave it alone. Okay? Instead of going over and over and over and over again. It's like you put in the request, your mind's job is done. And then leaving it alone from there. And then being willing to let what comes up. Napoleon Hill used to do this all the time. Send something out to his subconscious and then let it come back. And sometimes, you get ego thing. I recently transferred all my computer files over to a second computer, so I have a good backup. And Microsoft Word, surprise, surprise, it just can't access it without the product code. This was 2 years ago. I have no idea where the product code is this point. I don't think it's on too many computers, but... Anyway, Microsoft's helps solution to this is that, if you can't find it, you'll have to buy another copy. And So yeah, I decided instead of worrying about this, I have a lot of things to worry about right now. I was just going to put it out there. You know, wherever my product code is, just let me know, and I let go of it. Okay? So I have had sometimes this work really, really well. I lost my keys on a hike on a very dark canal. And, you know, when I'd been hiking, it was like, you know, it was literally in the dark with my dog. We covered a good 4 miles. And it was weird, but when I got there, I knew right where they were. Like, literally, like, reached, I couldn't see them, reached down and touched them, you know. But in this case, it was more of I just kind of realized today, it's like, what? So, hasn't shrunk. What am I going to do? And it's like, you're going to, when you go into the Apple store to get your other one fixed, you're going to buy another academic copy for the lousy $100 that are going to cost you that you can readily afford. Don't worry about it. I was like, oh, yeah, that would be a solution. not the one that I was looking for, but it's a totally valid and easy, simple solution. Yeah, it's cooler when you reach down and there are your keys. but that's part of letting go of ego. There, you know, it's not about parlor tricks. In yoga, there's a standard warning not to be impressed with the siddhas. And I'm not a yogi, so I'm not going to go far down this path. But the siddhas are these remarkable manifestations, you know, that are attributed to very accomplished yogis. And the reason is that these manifestations aren't the point. The connection is the point. So, you know, finding your keys is not the point. Just buy yourself another copy is not the point. It's like you wanted a solution. You got solutions. So, putting things out, but letting go of the outcome, letting go of attachment to the outcome, being ready for something better, for something different. This is one phase where, you know, I think contemporary Christians have nailed it when they say that God answers prayers in three ways. Yes, not yet, and, oh, I got something better. And those are really good answers. Yes is an obvious one. Not yet. That's totally Joseph Campbell, hero's journey. And, you know, oh, I got something better is what we've been talking about. Because to direct this, I would have to have total knowledge of all things, and there's no way to know that. And so intuition becomes really, really helpful. And like anything else, you know, this didn't sit well with me when it was new to me. And, you know, I speak today from the standpoint of having had time to sit with my intuition and watch it grow and to learn to trust and to come up with. You know, one of the reasons I shared my stories in the module was this in turn comes back to me. I keep running across very accomplished business people who literally set aside an hour or two a day specifically to tune into intuition. And they listen to it and they act on it. And, you know, I'm not talking about the kind of business people where you would obviously expect that that's what I do. I mean, you know, day-to-day, quote, hard-nosed, unquote, business people. It's an additional sense. It's part of who we are, and it can be very much grown and identified and used in very practical ways. But to go back to where I started with the playing the piano or the athlete, it isn't going to happen that way on day one. You know, I can do things on the bassoon today that would have been wizardry to me when I was in college. And, you know, how'd that happen? I just have more skills than I had before. Does it make sense?
Uh-huh.
Excellent. So what do you think, Eileen? Like Go ahead, Bruce.
It was reminding me of a time... in the fall, I was frustrated. I'm a, you know, working mom. I have three daughters. My life is very devoted to other people, and feeling frustrated about that. And I did kind of, you know, you kind of pray, and, you know, I'm feeling a little frustrated, but it's always been hard for me to take time for myself. And one of my spiritual practices is, we have a seasonal trail that I run on. It's beautiful. You can't see any houses. Just totally in the woods. There's some farms and cows and stuff. And, you know, I just kind of put it out there. Like, I really need some time for myself and to focus on myself. So I went on this run, which is part of getting that time. But on that run was this, one of these, it was in the summer, so things were green. And on my run, I saw this foil balloon. That, you know, one of those gaudy birthday balloons, mm-hmm. and it was stuck in the hedgerow there, and on it it said, "It's all about you." And it's like, you know, messages come, you know, when you least expect them, you know, with when you're asking, when you're desiring for things, you know, they're there. They're there. You just have to listen. And it was pretty neat seeing that, because it was just so out of place in the environment that it was, and the fact that it got stuck in a little, you know, this helium thing got stuck in a little hedgerow where I could see it. It was mm-hmm. really amazing. It was just one of those moments like, okay, I get it. I can create it, and it's all about me, and I can do it.
Have I told you guys about my experience in the Chicago airport?
Yes. Oh, well, it's so amazing.
I'm aware of.
What's that?
I said, I haven't heard it that I'm aware of.
Okay. I was headed to San Diego for a business conference, and I was tired. I was in the middle of a bunch of projects, and I was wondering, what about this? What about that? I had just really kind of considered how I might get involved in some big charitable projects, and how would that happen? And so there's all this, my head spinning, and, you know, I'm not in the calmest of states. I'm in a, you know, calm enough, but I've been in airports all day, right? In the air or in airports. I'm feeling that I'm going to my connecting flight, and I'm in O'Hare, and I'm walking, you know, the way you do through airports. And I come rounding the corner, and, oh, I don't know, it's 10, 12 feet right in front of me is a huge column, and in huge letters on this column, it says, "Emerson, consider it solved." and I'm like, you know, my mind's doing that double take that it does when it hasn't figured out what it thinks yet. And you know, every so often, however close they are, they're pretty close actually. So I don't know, 20, 30 feet. The next column says, "It's never been done before," which is like, yeah, that's my objection. And the next column says, "Emerson, consider it solved." And if they keep
can
going, like,
get any louder.
I know it. I was joking about this with friends later. It's like, you know, some of us need clearer signs than others. You know? and then it actually, you know, then it starts getting into the kind of projects that this company does. But it's then it was really interesting because I was thinking about a water reclamation project in Africa, and that was the very first project. You know. They featured. So I'm like, wow, okay. You know, I'm not a big one for coincidence, but I'm like, okay. I'm going to chill out and just let things take their course.
I was going to ask you, it sounds like meditation and prayer, rather than being a formal and scheduled process for you, both of those together are very integrated and continual.
Yeah.
And I have some of that throughout the day, but do you feel like having it initially as you're learning to do it, more formal and scheduled, helps that process, or is it a hindrance
yes.
to that process?
Helps, without a doubt, helps.
Yeah, definitely, I would say. Having formal scheduled stuff definitely helps get you. I found that, like, especially after my reconnection, it became that kind of touchstone point where I could get intuitive things. Like that was when, like Tim was saying, tuning into the frequency, like tuning the radio, and it would be, it was just, it is just a very, very, I think of all the things, that's like, to me, it's one of the most important things to do is to remain steady in practices, in daily practice and meditation.
Well said. And then, you know, yes, it starts to spill over so that it's the line between am I praying or meditating or neither gets fuzzy, you know, and it becomes part of just the of just daily life. But that comes with time. And it's not like, you know, is it done or is it over? That's the process that's, while I'm well down that road, it's still very much happening for me. And it's a path that many other people have identified long before this. You know, I'm signed up for a very big, expensive, year-long business program with, you know, and the first thing we do, the first part of the program is, you guessed it, tuning in, spiritual practice, ground, you know, and this is a very strategic, you know, goal-oriented program, but that's all the more reason why it starts with that connection. You know, if you pay attention, you'll see this everywhere. A friend of mine is a surveyor, and he recently had an experience where he had been talking to some guy about this joint venture. It looked really promising, and then they had a informal agreement, and then the next morning this 9-page contract shows up, and he's looking at, what is this? And it's nothing like they talked about. And, you know, and instead of flying off the handle, he thinks for a minute, calls his lawyer, says, you got a minute? He goes, yeah, come on over. And they talk about it, and you know, look at this. And first thing his lawyer says to him after this, he goes, well, what's your gut telling you? You know, in this case, is, well, if my gut says run. And the lawyer says, I was going to say walk, but yeah. those, it's learning to pay attention to those things. And yeah, we have to sort them out from fear, but we can learn to do that. Maybe not at first, but the difference between, you know, projection and intuition is noticeable. And I think mainly just becoming comfortable with not knowing everything, becoming comfortable with uncertainty, and that doesn't mean that we walk through, you know, through life blind and senseless, but just understanding, it comes back to the humility. It's like, I'm only going to get pieces of this, and I'm going to have to act based on pieces of that. And so to make good decisions, I'm going to need my gut. I'm going to need my heart. I'm going to need my intuition, because I can't get all the mental. Yeah.
You have to be willing to act on knowing only pieces of it. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Lisa will transcribe this, so.
I want to pull that one out and post it right now.
Right. All And then from there, the old chestnut, that plans change. You know, the whole thing that airplanes, you know, they're always off course. They just keep adjusting. All right. This is one of the places where our language gets it right, you know, listen to your heart. Yes, in some cases that's a Hallmark card, but it's also really good advice. And we all know to do this, you know. So, for example, you know, Bruce, I remember, you know, I ask everybody, you know, what compelled you to sign up? And you were just, some of the things you said resonated with me. That was listening to your heart.
Well, even though we to be a little bit frustrating for each other last week, I've always kind of felt a connection to you, Tim, from the first time I met you. I was, followed your journey with interest, and you've said a lot of things I've thought have had a lot of wisdom to them, too. So I appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad. Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. So it looks like we might be wrapping down here. Are there anything else, Eileen, from you?
No, I want to say thank you. It's been wonderful chatting again, and it's been an incredible journey, and it still is an incredible journey. It's one thing about this energy is that it keeps expanding. The further away from it you get, it keeps expanding.
Yeah.
If you think it's cool now, wait.
Right. And that's the whole goal here is to impart the tools of the process so that it's a continual
okay,
thing. And then from there,
I appreciate you inviting us old timers back too.
Oh, sure. I think it's great to hear how you're doing. It's good for everybody who listens to this recording to be able to tune into that as well. So it's very helpful all the way around. And one of the things that came to me in a flash of intuition.
I'm glad you listened to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody stay warm and out of the snow. You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Good to hear your voice.
Like I said, I usually work on Sunday, so probably not going to chat you up again, but good luck with your ventures. Be following on Facebook.
Okay, awesome. And same thing, Bruce. Glad things are starting to fall into place, and we'll step into the next module. What's that?
I said you and me both.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's well, the nice thing about having a process is that, you know, it's got to happen somewhere along the line. So that's very helpful. All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Tim.
Okay, good night.
Good night.